everybody. My name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic.
Darren.
Nice to be here in Santa Maria. Bloody hell. You all talk funny up here, you lot. I want to thank Kevin for asking me to come up here and share. It really is a privilege to come here and be able to do that because, you know, no one was asking me to go anywhere towards the end of my drinking. And I want to thank all the Santa Barbara crew for coming up here. You know, the Junkyard Dogs.
Whoa.
I love those guys. Brilliant 10-minute speaker. You know, I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know some of you might not be feeling that way. I wasn't feeling that way when I first got to AA. I was a pissed off, angry alcoholic. I'm one of those annoying, happy, grateful alcoholics simply because I've done the work in the big book and gone through the steps to the best of my ability and had that spiritual awakening. You know, the reason I drank is because I love the effect produced by alcohol. I love that shit. Now I love the effect produced by the first 164 pages in the 12 steps. This has to be a sufficient substitute for me, for even when drink was working. Of course it goes bad in the end, or else we'd all still be drinking. You know, it still will magically work, and I'll talk more about that later. But for the most part, Alcoholics Anonymous has to be for me as fun as when drinking was a good time. And it is. You have to be, in my experience, you have to be pretty active for that to be the case. But that's been my experience. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will talk a lot about drinking. But I remember, you know, I tried cocaine once for 15 years. And love that shit, me. I'll do anything that's going to make me drink longer or be that funny little chap in the pub. Right? I love speed. I love all that stuff. But you'll find out I'm a real drinker. And I'm an alcoholic because I suffer from that spiritual malady. That's what drove me into AA, was the mental and hellish torture of coming to in the morning. I didn't come in drunk. I did actually come in drunk. Let me rephrase that. But I didn't come in because I'd spilt too much beer down my T-shirt or I was hungover after the prom. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous because it absolutely ruined my life. Ruined it. And I'm that special type of alcoholic who ruins everybody else's life as well. You know, some of us think, I'm only hurting myself. You know, leave me alone. I was killing everybody around me. I'm a nightmare. I believe an alcoholic of my type, of the books, the book nails me to a T. It's like somebody was following me around in the 20s or 30s and taking notes. Like you had that experience, I couldn't believe some of the things I was reading. You know, I hope you identify with the book. I hope you're in the book. And that's the truth. I don't care if that offends anybody. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I need the real solution. I need the full strength solution. It's never happened to me where I've gone into a bar and a bartender's given me a stiff drink and I've taken a bit of it and gone, oh shit, that's a bit too strong, that mate. Could you take that back and water it down? I need the full deal. So I'm so happy when I came to AA, I went to some serious meetings and they knew that I needed a spiritual awakening. So I fought it in the beginning. I was angry, pissed off, and I don't want anything to do with you losers, right? Don't we all feel like that? Who comes skipping into Alcoholics Anonymous? God, I fought that shit to the end. To the end before I was going to go to A&A. It's so full of losers. It's full of ugly people. It's full of boring people. In England, that's where I'm from, by the way. It's not because I'm drinking. I have this accent. I'm from here. You know, they put it on the TV and it just is depicted. It's so boring. Like, there's a circle of 14 guys and they're all old and crabby. One of them's 14 days sober and they're all crying. Like, fuck, I've got to go to AA and the sober dancers. I just couldn't believe how bad that's going to be. Like, they were telling me to go to AA too. And I'm like, hang on a minute. I'm already suicidally depressed, thank you very much. What are you trying to finish me off quicker or something? I just didn't get it. But finally, there was nowhere else to go. And I remember being in the Alano Club in Santa Barbara, and you were all happy and shit. I used to hate happy people, me. I hate you. Oh, my God. I was so bad. But I'd be in the Alano Club, and some giddy woman would be, my name's Betty, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I'd stand up and go, screw you, Betty, I'm a pissed off, angry alcoholic. And, I'd get ejected. I've been ejected out of AA meetings because I didn't get it. I didn't know Alcoholics Anonymous had a program of action. I thought it's just these meetings in basements or churches were, because I'm so much trouble out there. I was so much trouble out there. Darren, at least go here and be quiet for an hour and just be miserable with other miserable folks. Go and be miserable. That's what I thought. I didn't know anything. So by the time I got here, I was completely and utterly hopeless. And I'll tell you now, that's a good way to come into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because for a long time I was either too cute, or I still had some game, or I still had this and I still had that. I'm not going to write a thorough fourth step when I'm feeling like that. I'm sure as shit not going to make any amends or pray and meditate. So I come in, the game was over. It was over. So when I'm drinking in England, I started drinking at 13 and I got sober at 33. So I had a good career right there. And like the 10-minute speaker, for the most part, I had a great time up until my mid to late 20s. Thank God. It sucks that some of you didn't have a good time at all. Some people in AA, they didn't. I'm sorry. I had a great time. I love to drink, me. Absolutely love to drink. So if you're here checking it out and you love to drink, you should go and have a fucking drink. Go and check it. Go and keep drinking. I'm not here to tell you've got to stop drinking. At all. In fact, I would encourage it. If anyone told me to be not drinking, if you want to keep drinking, that's your business. If you want to stop drinking, then that is our business. And there is a solution. I'm a bad drunk. I should be dead. It's so easy for us to not remain grateful as well. Whether you're 1 year sober or 10 years sober, it's so easy to lose gratitude. So I got to work hard all the time to remain grateful. It's whether I went for a job a couple of years ago within Santa Barbara City College where I already work, and I deserve this other job. I'm a good candidate. I've got some experience. I'm doing good. I'm doing the deal. I'm giving this thing away, and I don't get the job. And it's like, God, I think I deserve it. When I think about it, though, really, if I got what I deserved, I'd be in prison. That's where I should be. I should be in prison. Never mind be pissed off about not getting a little promotion somewhere. I am truly blessed to be alive and have a fabulous life. But I'm the type of alcoholic who has to stay busy and has to stay active, who has to chop wood and carry water just to remain happy with my lot. Right? And I have a good lot, thank you very much. Right? I have to be active just to still like that. So when I'm drinking from 13 through my teenage years, and it's kind of a normal age to start drinking in England. You're 13, you start drinking the cider in the park with your mates. It's all good until you get caught off your parents and you get a slap. But 13, 14, 15, then we started to go into the pubs at 14, 15, which is brilliant. In England, the drinking age is 18, and there's no ID system. It's weird, I know. They don't have bouncers on the door. You just have to kind of look 18, kind of. And maybe just have the front or the cojones to go in and demand a drink, which is what some of us did. And I was 14, my mates were 15, and we went in this pub, demanded a beer and got one. And then once you've been served, you're in. You can't get served and then next week not get served because they served you last week. And we were just in the pub from a young age. And then I remember celebrating my 18th birthday in this pub, and the landlord was irate because we'd been going in there 4 years already. He was so annoyed with us all, I was 14, then 15 quickly, and had a little thing going on here, but I was in the bathroom, and the landlord came in, and there was 25 of us in the pub, and we're all having a good time. He's all, "Jeez, Darren, what's going on here? There's a lot of you." I said, "Hey, it's my birthday, George." He's like, "Oh, yeah, grand. How old are you?" I'm 18. He's like, "You little bastard. I'll buy you a drink." But I'm having nothing but a good time. My alcoholism also was progressing, really. And if you'd have told me then, even if you could have described, hey, Darren, here's what's going to happen to you. We're going to map out your drinking career, and it's going to get bad, and you're going to end up here like this. There's no way still I would have stopped drinking because of the effect produced by alcohol. I thought that effect, that was the same effect for everybody, but I guess not. It's not. Me and my friends all had a good time, but they were not alcoholic. But it didn't fully supercharge them like it technicolored, dream-coated me, thinking I was Superman. You know, I have a couple of pints of Stella, and my world is lit up. And so imagine having 2 pints, getting lit up, and going, oh, that's enough of that. Oh, no, it's on, right? And that's why I identify as being an alcoholic, because I have the on button. And typically will overshoot the mark, and that's where it started to progress for me. And then when things get so bad, I think, oh, okay, maybe I should stop. I cannot. I simply cannot leave it alone. So as I graduate through school and college and university, and I do well academically, I'm an achiever. I'm good at sport, so I'm having a good time. Drinking is a massive, exhilarating, and important part of my life, you know. But there's no bad consequences. I in my early 20s, I moved back from the university town. I went back to Manchester in northern England, where I'm from, and me and my brother form a partnership and go into business together. And it was just one of those wonderful stories where we became very successful very quickly. He was already a businessman. He's a couple of years older than me, and he had this idea. I was fresh out of university. I was supposed to be an instructor, and that didn't suit me at the time. He said, I'll come up here, and I've got this idea. And we got together, and it just worked brilliantly. He was a brilliant businessman. I'm not really. He's a brilliant businessman. I'm a bit of a good bullshit and a good marketer, let's say. But we had this good combination. So we started this accident assistance company, and we bought a couple of vehicles. And just within 18 months, we had 50 vehicles and outstanding invoices of £1 million, which is about $2 million back then. So it was wonderful. Like, we started this business in my bedroom, and we got local offices, and then we got secretaries and other workers, and it just mushroomed. You know, I had arrived. You know, I remember going into the bank, and that line in the back, you know, that the banker watched with amused skepticism as I whirled fat checks in and out of the account. You know, everything was cool, everything was good, and for the next few years, money and applause and all that stuff, I have Miss Manchester on my arm, and I'm driving a sports car, and life is good. What I didn't know was going to happen, though, was that alcoholism was going to take its mighty grip on me. Right? The best way I can describe it, I was beginning to feel weird. I was beginning to feel weird, that's all I could say. I would wake up in the morning and I'm a bit nervous, or I'm a bit jittery, or I didn't really want to go to this high-powered business meeting bullshit I got to go to. I didn't really feel like doing that, which wasn't really much like me. I was a bit of a lazy bastard too, I guess, but when it mattered, I was a bit of a go-getter. And especially if it involved the business, and me and my brother had said we were going to do something. But I started to feel weird. Now I know that was the onslaught of alcoholism and the spiritual malady. I suffer terribly from that spiritual malady. You know, and that did begin to progress. But within a year or so, it had affected me doing my business so much. People knew, especially my brother, because I couldn't go to these meetings and stuff. I remember being in the bank one time, feeling so weird, so anxious. Anyone else ever suffered from anxiety in here or a panic disorder? Oh my God, isn't that the worst feeling in the world? I wouldn't wish that on anyone. If anything, just to relieve that, do the 12 steps, have a spiritual awakening. But it's so wrapped up in the spiritual malady. So wrapped up in it. So I was in the line at the bank, and I'm feeling shifty, and I look all right, I'm suited up and everything, but something weird's going on, and you know, I'm not quite right, and she's looking at me weird. You know, he knows what's going on, and things are going weird, but I don't know, I'd have to have my game face. I was always having to have my game face on. As long as you think I'm okay, that's all I give a shit about. And I was in this line and people seemed to be looking at me. I remember just thinking, if this girl actually, someone confronted me and said, hey, mate, what is wrong with you? Be like, oh, shit, I don't know. Do you know? Because I don't know. And I just have to leave. I'm found out kind of thing, right? And I'm always thinking I'm on the edge. I'm on the edge. I am on the edge of anxiety. And I'm on the edge of a nervous mental breakdown or something, right? Things got so bad at my work, they let me go. It was my business. Well, we had directors and all that and shareholders, but I got fired. That was a big deal at the time. We had this boardroom meeting and my brother, the director of finance, this other guy, and me had become this lazy just... But I wasn't alcoholic, because when I drank at night time, everything is great because it's working brilliantly. But it's during the day. The days were a nightmare, just a nightmare. So when we had this surprise meeting and I was fired, it was a bad scene. You know, I was kicking the tables over. I was attempting to jump the table and headbutt my brother, you know, because I believe in good communication, you know. So I'm trying to get to him and my friend's tackling me off. But I remember going home that day and I was just floored. I was devastated. My world had collapsed in an instant because I attacked so much about... I loved having the gorgeous girl, me, and I love having the car. You know why, though? Because it's taking the eyes off of me a little bit. If I'm with her, you're not looking at me. And I don't... When you start to feel like that with alcoholism, you start to feel anxious. Last thing you want is everybody looking at me. What's up with you? Oh, you don't want that shit. So I like it, the look at these other things. So I had this facade and this business, which was real, but it kept the eyes off me. And then as soon as I lost that, I knew that the game was up at that time. And so I went home and I was devastated for hours and hours and hours. I was devastated. I'd already arranged to go out that night and meet some of my mates. And all I'm thinking is about, all I care about is how can I spin it? How can I spin it? I left that place. How can I spin it? And I'm thinking, I don't know. I go to the pub. I'm there before any of my mates. And as soon as I get... I've been low as you can imagine for 5 or 6 hours. I get two good, tall, stiff ones in me. The old fierce determination to win came back like that. My friends come in and all that. Hey, did you hear? Did you hear? Yeah, I told all those lots to forget about it. Who needs them? I don't need them. I don't need this. I don't need that. I'm going to go travelling. I'm going to go to America and become president or something. That's what I'm going to do. Full of beer. And do anything I want. So that's all I cared about. I'd fully convinced them, my mates, who believe anything I say, that it was my decision. So I'm good. Okay, I'm good. They believe me. Didn't we all like used to do that? That's living a double life. The mask is... That's all that I care about is what you think about me. Meanwhile, I'm dying on the inside. I'm absolutely dying from this soul sickness. This spiritual malady is killing me. Right? So what do? I jump on. I get some money for leaving the place. I invest it, and I jump on a plane. I come to America for a 2-week holiday, 16 years ago. I just hopped on a plane. I have a cousin over here that I've never met before, and he owns an English pub in Santa Barbara. Right? Now, I know I've got a bit of a problem. I'm still not comfy with the word alcoholic, but there's something going on. Maybe it's the other stuff. Maybe it's this, that, and the other. Maybe it's Manchester. You know, but here's the problem. And I fly all the way to LAX, and the problem right there in LAX now. And I go up to Santa Barbara. I've no job, I've got some money, and instead of staying 2 weeks, I just stay 3 months drunk. 3 months, because my visa allowed me to stay for 3 months. I love it. It's sunny, for God's sake. I'm not going home to Manchester. It rains every day. So I become this daily drinker, because if you go on vacation as an Englishman, you get drunk. It's just a simple math. So I'm on holiday, so I get drunk all the time, and why not? I have no responsibilities. I am feeling weirdly nervous during the days, but it don't matter because I can avoid humans wherever possible, and then I can go out at night. And once I've had a few of them, I'm fully lit. But that is I've almost crossed that line at this point, because the solution to my problem, which is anxiety and feeling weird, the solution to my problem is the thing that's killing me. The solution to my problem is the thing that's killing me. Talk about cunning, baffling and powerful. You know, I'm beyond human aid without even knowing it. But you're never going to take that. If drink still works like it was working for me then, you're still never going to take that off of me. Ever. I have to ride that vehicle all the way. So I buy an SUV and a friend of mine, we go travelling out all around America, all around the United States. We go to 32 states, do a big circle, see everything a tourist should see. We're drunk all the time for 6 months, right? And I come back with 7 outstanding warrants in 5 different states. Right? I don't know what that means. That means I've had a good freaking time, right? You Americans have some weird, you know, things going on. Darren, you got warrants on. Yeah, what's that? I don't know. If I come back to Santa Barbara, my friend goes home, all that shit catches up with me and I have to clean all that up. But so I'm in Santa Barbara, no income, all the stocks that I'd invested in crashed, and I need to start working. And I'm just in this fast lane of partying, and I become a bartender. I become basically a drunk bartender. My boss, my cousin, was brilliant. Everybody in Santa Barbara knows this man because he's such a wonderful human being, and he has a fun pub. And he says to me, I'm like, Rob, I've no money. My stocks have gone down. They'll come back one day. Ever the optimist me, I'll be back, I'll be a millionaire, but right now they're not worth anything. And, you know, I need a job. He's all, why don't you work here? You have a funny accent like me. Why don't you work here and become a bartender? I said, I don't know anything about bartending. He said, come here. And he gave me a pint glass, and he went, shh. He said, a bartender. Hey, I'm a bartender. There's one other thing you had to learn. And he was pouring a shot of Jaeger. 1, 2, 3, 4. One for good luck. Right? That's it. Bartender. Pint. Jaeger. That was it. There's no daiquiris in this joint. It's a dive bar. So I become this bartender. And it's wonderful when I'm drunk. But I'm still... Now I'm really starting to tank a little bit. Right? Because now... Here's what happened, right? It just seemed to progress so quickly. And I remember thinking, I've got to get out of this fast. It would take me 2 full days to recover now if I'd drank for a few days. I used to feel rough one morning, tough it through that day, that night. Oh, thank God, next day, no problem. Now it was taking 2 days of no human interaction, for sure. I'm in my bedroom, suffering terribly. And then the third day, I might feel something like normal. But I can't do that. I've got to go to work. So here's what would happen. This is the state he got to. I'd wake up. I'd come to. Because I was drinking. He kept telling me, Darren, you're drinking. This is a fun pub. You can have a couple of drinks. But you can't get hammered and wasted every night. You're going to lose me my pub. Okay, mate. We had that conversation for like 18 months. So I would wake up. And I'd come to. And it'd be a nightmare. Because I'm sweating. I don't know where I am, and I'm thinking, oh, the mental and hellish torture is coming in. I'm jittery. I'm like, oh, my God, please don't be a Wednesday. Whatever is happening right now, don't be a Wednesday, because I've got to work on a Wednesday. Don't be a Wednesday. Oh, my God, it's Wednesday. And I'm in bed. I'm like, what's this here? You know, oh, my God. I hope that's female. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I get out of bed. And all I'm thinking is, oh, my God, I've got to be in work at 10:30. And it's like 9 o'clock and I'm panicked. Panic mode. Remember that? Panic mode. And I had this sense of impending doom. And you know why I had this sense of impending doom? Because something bad was going to happen. It's a fact. You live like we live, and something bad is going to happen. But I live with that all the time. I'm in trouble. What did I do? I can't remember. I go to the bar. Don't get drunk. I get drunk. Blackout. Wake up. Panic. Wednesday. So I've got to go to work because it's a Wednesday. So I get showered. I get on my bike. It's 10 o'clock. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. I'm going down State Street. Imagine going to work behind a bar, anxious, as off a level 10. I'm 100. Anxious and jittery. And everybody wants you and wants to talk to you. And human interaction. So I'm pedaling down State Street. So this is what I come up with. My solution would have been bomb it down State Street, get to the Irish pub, so I could, across from the English pub, so I can have a few drink, get a few drinks in me, right? Because I know the woman, I know the Irish bird down there. We all the bartenders, we all know each other. We all go around, tip each other on our days off and get leathered for free and all this shit. So I go down to see Yvonne, who's there every Wednesday. But I'm hanging on by a thread. By a thread. And everyone's going to find out because the facade is going, right? Things got so bad for me that by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can only think of two things. Two. I'm either thinking about me, or I'm thinking about what you're thinking about me. That is it, right? That is all my brain can manage. So I'm bombing it down State Street, and I go into Dargan's, and there's Yvonne, and I am like a caged animal, tiger. And she's doing some weird shit like cleaning and stuff. I'm losing my mind. I'm jumping, crawling out of my skin. I've got bugs on me and everything. And I go in there, but the game is this. I've got to be really normal. I've got to come across as normal. You, as long as you think I'm okay, it's all I care about. So I'm in there, and I'm do you ever remember? I think I drank so much hard alcohol, I actually ruined my wiring. Did you ever feel like that, where I'm gone? I used to be able to do things and be quite smart, but I'm just gone. I'm a goner. So I'm in there, and she's like, "Hey, Jesus, Darren, how you doing, love? Hey, how you doing?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm all right. If you leave me alone, kind of thing, you know." I got to go work in a bit, Yvonne. Yeah, and I'm rough though. I think I need hair of the dog, you know. I need, as if it's normal, you know. I might even have a drink. I don't know. Oh, Jesus, really? Gosh, 10 o'clock. But you can have a drink. You want a drink? You want? Yeah. Okay, I'll have a drink. Thank you for suggesting it, you know. So I'm dying. I want to give me a drink. And she'll turn around and she'll clean something, take her time and pour this. And I am just like, oh, God. And then she'll get the drink. She puts it in front of me and stands there looking at me. And I just want to stab her in the neck. Give me the drink and go away, whatever. And she'll, like a lifetime of being nice and doing human interaction. And then she'd turn around and clean some of, "Thank God, you bitch." And I get the drink and pour it all over. It's not enough. It's almost as it's not enough. Hey, Yvonne, you know what? I'm really rough. I might have a Jaeger. Thinking that sounds weird. Yeah, but Jesus, Derek. Yeah, but I just need to be squared away. Oh, yeah. Okay, she's a bartending drunk too, you know. He's me a massive Jaeger. Massive. Right, turn away, fucking clean something, you stupid. And she gave me that, and I slam that Jaeger down, and I get that magical, thank God. In fact, fucking Superman again, aren't I? I'm going to work now in the pub I own. I own the pub, and I'm going to come back and shag Yvonne on my break, probably. I'm fucking Superman now. See you later, Yvonne, you know what I mean? Yeah, I'll be back. Go over to the English pub. But now all I wanted to do is take the edge off and feel like that. But now I've set off the phenomenon of craving, the allergy. I can't get drunk again because I've been on 18 months of warning. And he's almost fired me this whole time, but I would go to the bar, get giddy and drunk. I don't want to, but I have to kind of maintain that thing. And then what happened was I woke up one day, "Get down here now." Oh my God. That phone call was coming for a long time. Go down to the pub, fired. "Darren, you got a problem. I don't know what to do with you, mate. Told you for 18 months, give you every chance in the book. I've done this, I've done that." And he was right with everything. I felt this big. That was worse than losing my multi-million pound position. I was done. I'd become this angry drunk. I'd become this not a good guy. I'd become physical with some of the girlfriends that I had. I'd gone from a happiest drunk to a nightmare drunk. And it seemed like the whole of downtown had turned on me. Quite rightly in some regards, but every bartender, every pub, the news on the wires went like that. Darren got fired, did you hear? Good. Good. You know, I could have lost that man his pub many, many times over. They were just kind of looking out for him. But what happened? My world got so very small after that. Very small. Hung around a little bit until I got 86 pretty much from every single bar. Every single bar. Nobody wanted to know me. So I'm living now in a shithole on the west side of town. And I'm just starting to circle the drain of life. I have no income, I have no way of working, I'm not a functioning alcoholic, me. So I was just living to drink, but I didn't want to drink, I just knew everything was over. Talk about low, talk about depressed, talk about being in the grips of alcoholism. And nobody had seen me for a long time. Here's what a typical day would be for me. I'd wake up, it would be pitch black outside. I'd come to, I have no idea if it's night or day. I'd figure it out when it's 5 a.m. And I know what that means. That means this is the longest day of my life ahead of me. I don't want to drink because I've been doing it for as long as I can remember. I would wait as long as was humanly possible before reaching under my bed to grab the vodka, and it was usually about 10 minutes. Because the voices are starting to come. I had a voice at the end of the bed waiting for me. I'd open my eyes and they go, "Hey, he's here. You ready? Loser. Told you would get fired from that job. You're going to lose this place too, you know that, don't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I know all this, but how do you know all this? You know a lot, you lot." Talking to the voices in my head. I'm hearing my name. I'm just a goner. And after 10 minutes, I'd reach under the bed and pick up that horrible, strong, warm vodka. And I have the big bottle of vodka, and I always have that much. Always. Because I need it. And I would slug it down. It'd be a nightmare. Blah, blah, slug them all down. And finish it off, and I'd get that for a minute. And then the game is this. I need to maintain some level of drunkenness, or I'm going to have a nervous mental breakdown. I'm going to start the convulsions and have the you know, what do you call it? We have that withdrawal from alcohol, seizure. Happened to me many times. So I would go to this store called Foodland, one block away. Sometimes I get arrested between there and Foodland because I'm just a nightmare drunk. The sheriffs had evicted me 6 months before. I just slept rough for 2 days and busted my way back in to this room on the side of a building with its own entrance. You know, I'd wear the appropriate clothing because I need to steal 3 big bottles of vodka because I was going to drink 2.5 of them that day. And I'd steal some change, buy some chips, steal the vodka, come out of there 6 a.m., go home, start to drink. You know, and maintain, because I can't pass out or it's going to be a nightmare. I've got a bit of a routine going on. And I remember walking to Foodland once, and I remember thinking, I always had this preconceived notion of what an alcoholic is. It ain't me. It's definitely none of you lot. It ain't me, because I'm a party animal. Stupid. I'm a party animal. I love to drink and do drugs. I love it, and I'm good at it. An alcoholic is the bum on the street. That's all it is, drinking out of a brown paper bag. A loser. So that's not me. Meanwhile, I'm going to Foodland, shuffling along, thinking I'm looking great, and I catch myself in the shop window mirror, and I'm like, I remember it dark, thinking, oh my God, better not tell anyone about that. You know, I just carried on, shuffling on. I just was this emaciated, bearded, I had hair as well, hair everywhere, just like, I'd find my breakfast in my hair and stuff. And I go to Foodland and steal 3 bottles of vodka and shuffle home and drink. And I remember, like, I'd be a bottle into me drinking. And a movie would come on, like Pretty Woman. So I'd start crying. It's Pretty Woman. And I'm crying because it was made in 1997. And don't you understand, in 1997, I was a businessman and employing people, and I had that Fitbit on my arm, and I had all this, and, you know, I'm living, I do regret the past. I can't shut the door on it. I'm always living in the past. The present is torture, and the future is nothing but hopeless. So I'm a mess. And I would drink like that to get to like 11 o'clock or midnight to maybe catch a good enough sleep to not have to drink the next morning. And in the big book it says, in Bill's story, the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms. I drank like that for 2 more years. 2 more years of 3 big bottles of vodka. Jails, institutions, and death were current in my life. You couldn't scare me with death at that point. Death, bring it on. Alcoholism doesn't have the dignity to take you quickly. It's going to mess with you for a long time, and it's not pretty. I've seen it. I experienced it for a long time, and I've seen it happen when it eventually takes somebody out. Nightmare. I don't know how I survived it. Here's what happened one night, one day when I came to, pretty much my last day drinking. I woke up, no booze under the bed. That had never happened to me before. I'd been hospitalized many times. I'd been to jail many times. I'd flirted with suicide many times. I've had a gun in my mouth. I've stood on the 154 bridge more than once. You know, these are not cries for help. I couldn't find the bullets one day and all this stuff. And I wake up, dark outside, no vodka. I went the longest period in my room without a drink. It was like 2 hours. 2 hours. You know how some counsellors talk about triggers? And they mean well, but they don't know what they're talking about, right? Especially if they're not one of us. They'll say, oh, if you want to get sober, you know, don't stay away from those people or don't go to that area of town, you know, because it's a trigger. It'll make you drink. A trigger for me was waking up. I wake up, I'm going to have to drink. So I can't not wake up where I am from. The trigger thing is bullshit. I have to have the problem removed. So I wake up, there's no vodka. I stay for 2 hours to deliberate how I'm going to best kill myself. I know it's going to kill my mum, that's what stopped me doing it before. But there's a calmness about me, because I'm going to do it this time. I jump in the car, I drive up the 154, before the suicide barriers were there, I leave the car on the end, I walk down the middle, and I'm contemplating this thing. It's now about 10:30 or 11 a.m. or something like that. Some people are honking the horn thinking I'm lost or am I going to do something stupid. You know, some people are just thinking, it must look odd, I'm there in the middle of the bridge. And this voice comes in my head, and it was a voice from, I'd started going to AA, but I wasn't doing shit. Screw you, Betty, I'm a pissed off alcoholic. Wasn't doing anything, no steps, no sponsor, no nothing. And the voice said, this guy had told me what's up one day after a meeting. He said, listen, come here, you. I used to always talk about killing myself in the meetings. He's like, you might well kill yourself. You won't be the first. But listen, you can never say you gave Alcoholics Anonymous a good go. Come sober, he said, first of all. It works better. I was drunk in meetings all the time. Drinking in meetings for a year in Santa Barbara. He said, and get a sponsor and go through all 12 steps and the book, because you have to have a spiritual awakening. You've never done nothing, so F you and I'm F you and F you. And that conversation came into my head. So I was so annoyed and so down, but I made a decision there, and I said, you know what? I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to do those stupid-ass 12 steps. And when they don't work, I'm going to go and find that man. We're going to have a little conversation. So I got in my car, but now I can't just skip into AA. I need like medically detoxing one more time. I've been hospitalized 4 times that year. So I drive down the hill, I go to the emergency room, and I park in my usual spot. And as I'm pulling in, I hit this car. And there's not much damage, but a big noise, and security come out. The police are already there. It's the emergency room. And they start to engage me in this. And look, there's a calmness about me, because I was about to kill myself. This is the longest I've ever been without a drink. But I look disheveled, and I must stink of booze. So the cops come, and is this your car? Yeah, it's my car. I got my ID. I said, listen, I got some health problems, though, so can we kind of take care of this later? Because they know me in there and I need to go in there. And they went, no, have you been drinking? I said, nope. Okay. Are you sure? Yeah. Okay, we have to do these field sobriety tests. Well, okay. So he gives me all these field sobriety tests and I do them all perfectly. Pisses him right off. Gives me some more to do. I do them all perfectly. He's about to let me go and it's like one of them was kind of rooting for me. But the other one was a right by the book bastard. And he's all right. I smell alcohol. You need to blow into this thing. I'm like, okay. And I blow into his little stupid machine and I blow a 0.32. And he can't believe it. Then I tell him, I'm like, was that must be, from the reaction, that must be high or something, I don't know. So I said, look, mate, I can't use the terminology I can use now, but I'd learned some things. I said, listen, mate, I'm an alcoholic. They know me in there. I've been in 5 East, the lockdown psychiatric unit, 4 times this year, right? And it was April. and he said, if you can't arrest me, if you take me to jail, I will kill somebody. I am small, but I am fucking dangerous. And I meant it. And he knew I meant it. And he, when he said, well, that's a funny little story, young man, but turn around while I put the handcuffs on you. Oh, my God. So, but he ended up arresting me, but not taking me to jail. Marvelous things were already starting to happen. He took me to the police station. And he was, I could hear him on the phone going up there, and he's like, we've got this Irishman, and he's a point, as I'm fucking English. And we got, he's blew a 0.32, and he's sober, and he's talking, and he's all this, and, you know, last week they pulled someone over, and he was a 0.25 or something, and they opened the door, and he fell out of the car, you know, unconscious. And they take me to the police station, they take blood, and it goes higher. Oh, shit, keep it at a 0.32. So They keep me there for 6 or 7 hours until my blood level starts to drop. And then what happened is somebody they knew comes and picks me up and took me to the lockdown psychiatric unit one more time. And I go into 5 East. They medically detox me by giving me a shitload of drugs, which is awesome. And then they detox me from the drugs and pop me out of there sober one more time. But so what? I've done that many times. Everyone says we can't stop drinking. Yeah, you can. I could even stop drinking. You know, hit a cop, you're going to stop drinking. You'll be separated from alcohol. Sometimes in the earlier years, I had literally stopped drinking myself and gone through the mental hellish torture like you see on the TV and the movies, and I pop out 3 days later in the same room, shaking it all out of me, hallucinating, and detox myself. So we can do it. I just can't stay stopped. I've gotten drunk on the way home from hospital several times. The only thing that was different is when I came out, it was a Wednesday and I went straight to the junkyard dogs. And I got a sponsor who seemed to be a drunk just as bad as me. He was happy. Remember Mike? Yeah, Jason. He was happy. He had a car, a job and a girlfriend. But you'd hear him talking about the solution. And I was saying to him, look, mate, there's 40, 50 guys and it's an intimidating meeting, and I just went straight up to him and said, hey, before the meeting, I said, hey, you got to help me. I'm going to drink tonight. And we did a third step prayer right there and then in front of everybody. I'd never dream of doing that before. Too cool for that shit, don't you know? I was not too cool anymore. We did that. We went into the meeting. And after the meeting, he said, hey, we've done that prayer. I know you've been around. I know we've read through the book and the 60 pages, but we're going to get you into action. Because I said, I'm going to drink tonight. So he started me off on my fourth step. And I did a massive effort on the first column of resentments and I almost finished it. I woke up at 5 a.m. like usual and went to the beach and finished it. I called him at 6 o'clock and he answered the phone. Because he knew. And he was in a qualifying game for the US Open. He was a brilliant golfer. He answered the phone and said, I've done with that column. Couldn't believe it. What? I've done that column. I've done everything. I've got 200 names. What's next? Tell me the next column. And I did it. And I called him back. I called him 12 times that day to finish the resentments and finish the fears and I finished the sexual inventory. I shared it with him the next day. He answered the phone every time. I shared it with him the next day. After we'd done it, I was going to keep two things to myself. And he told me, listen, Darren, we always keep something to ourselves, and it's not a good or a bad thing, it's that you're going to drink again thing. And I told him these two things really quick, and he went, okay. But I was done and I was free. And he said, hey, Darren, thank you so much. I said, I'm glad you feel good, because I still feel like shit. He said, oh, don't worry about it. Trust in the process. He showed me 6 and 7 the next day, and then I transferred my list and I added to it. On my 4th or 5th day of sobriety, I went out around Santa Barbara and did 21 amends that morning. And I was simply rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. I felt awesome. I felt a sense of power, peacefulness and happiness flow into me. Some people call that shit God. I don't care. I felt it. I knew it was real. And I was telling him all about it in between the amends. And then one went bad. Don't matter. Do another one. I did another one. It went okay. I went into Foodland and said, listen, I need to speak to the manager. Took him down a little aisle. And I said, listen, I just want you to know I live locally across the street there. And I'm a bad drunk. And I've stolen a lot of vodka from you. I say it was cheap vodka, but it was a lot. And I've tried to tally it up, and I've erred on the side of caution, and I drank $2,760 worth of vodka. I've just gained a job. I said, I am living my life a completely different way today. I said, here's $20. I'll be back every Friday with $20 until this is paid off and any interest you determine. Is there anything else I can do to make this right? And he said, what? Told him again. And I did that. And before I was halfway through paying him, 6 months in or whatever it was, he said, stop coming in. Stop coming in, we're good. That's the shit that's kept me sober ever since, staying into that kind of action. The next day I did 15 more amends. I went to my sponsor, oh my God, what is next? And he showed me steps 10 and 11. And he said, here's what you do in the morning and here's what you do at night. Ask your sponsor about it. A bit of prayer meditation and review your day at night, a few minutes. And I started to do that. I went back to my home group the next week, a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like a little maniac. Giddy, happy, running round to people in the rooms going, it's amazing, isn't it? Talking to this guy who was 2 years sober. Just some guy who's hanging out. He didn't have a clue what I was talking about. I went back to my sponsor. He doesn't know what. He hasn't even done a step. So, Darren, not everybody does the steps in AA. Don't worry about it. You needed to do it. And you've done it. Now carry this message. He said, you've had a spiritual awakening. Now, if you want to keep this and feel as good as you've been feeling, you've got to carry this message to other alcoholics. That's when you share in meetings. And then above and beyond that, of course, when you're a bit more sober. But don't talk about your shit day in a meeting. Talk about the message. And then practice these principles in all your affairs. If you do that, you can stay sober as long as you want. None of this bullshit hanging on by a thread, miserable as fuck, one day at a time. None of that shit. None of that shit. There's so much of that shit in AA. Hate that shit. Why would I do that? So that's what I've chosen to do since then. Every day. I don't think there's a day I've ever missed prayer and meditation. Possibly meditation a dozen times in a dozen years, almost. But there's not, and I do it not because I want to be a goody little fucking two shoes. I do it because I don't ever, ever, ever want to take another drink again and have to maybe try and do something about it. I don't personally think I've got another recovery in me. I probably have another drink in me, but I do not think I'll be coming back. And anyway, it ain't that big of a deal anyway. I'll go to 4 meetings a week, do my morning thing, my night thing, and give this thing away for fun and for free. Look at all these guys and gals that came up. We are lucky in Santa Barbara. We have an active group. I am blessed to be able to sponsor a group of guys and watch them sponsor a group of guys. And a fellowship has grown up around me. You know, and like I started off, gratitude will still come and go. My ego will still grow. And it's got to go. I can only have it gone by action to stay right sized. You know, I want applause for everything. Me, I'm well like that. I want applause for working 8 hours. I want my wife in the hallway giving me a round of applause when I come home. Good job, Darren. You did a full 8 hours. Yeah, I did. You know, or if I'm home before and I'll do the dishes. All these guys wear this shit so many times. But some of them haven't, all right? I'll do the dishes, and I don't do the dishes and clean them up and put them away like she does, because she's healthy and normal. I do the dishes and spread that shit all over the kitchen, so when she comes home, she can go, Darren did the dishes. Isn't he awesome? Or I'll leave the Hoover out after I've hoovered up. Boom! That bitch will know I've done it. Boom! It's right there. I'll hear a car coming home and make sure that Hoover's in the middle of the room and scurry off into the back bedroom so she can have a little Darren moment. And how brilliant I am. I'm always out of balance. I'm like an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, right? I always want something. We can't front you this deal. We can't front you the spiritual experience. This is not for those that need it. It's not for those that want it. It's for those that do it. They're the only people that get to experience what I've been given, which is a spiritual awakening, this thing that's like a magic trick. I remember going home to my mum. There's another speaker says something similar, that this was my experience. I was 5 years sober, and I'm doing ever so well, and my mum's this Irish woman who lives in England still with me dad, and I went over and we're having this moment. I've been a good son up to now. I've been doing the things I've said I would do. And I go and visit her and it's quiet. And I give her this thing. And some chip. And she's a proper Irish woman. What's this shit? What are you doing? What's going on here? I said, it's me chip. I'm 5 years sober. And she said, so was the fucking dog. What a bitch, eh? Come on, Mum, shut the French door. She's, true story, she's not going to give me the credit I think I should get for not doing something I shouldn't be doing in the first place. She's a simple woman, right? Yeah, you shouldn't be drinking, you're an idiot and a maniac. Of course you shouldn't be drinking. Oh, she doesn't want to know about all the spiritual aspects, she just wants to know I'm calling her and I'm doing the deal and I'm being a good boy. And the last thing I'll say is this, if you're struggling with the God thing, I struggle with that a long time, but I heard a great woman speaker say, you know, totally against religion. She said, you know, listen to this, religion could be for people that are perhaps trying to avoid going to hell, but spirituality is for people that have been to hell, and I identify with that. Thank you very much.